You're about to listen to the Complete Developer Podcast, the podcast by coders, for coders, about all aspects of life as a developer.
I'm Will, the curmudgeonly experienced developer.
And I'm Beege, the optimistic newbie developer.
Complete Developer Podcast is supported by listeners like you. We are now on Patreon at www.patreon.com/Complete Developer Podcast.
Eyebrows on fleek! This week, we're discussing how to present yourself well as a software developer with John Sonmez. The software development industry has got a bit of a reputation, from poor personal hygiene to poor relationship hygiene to social awkwardness. How developers present themselves often stands in the way of them achieving their full potential. Developers, we have to get better at this stuff if we want the kind of careers where we are truly treated like professionals instead of assembly line workers. Before we get started, though, Will, what have you been fighting this week?
Well, we're down one man at work. One of the senior developers is gone, leaving me as the only senior .NET developer. And we were kind of slightly understaffed before, so it has gotten really interesting. There's a lot of very fast typing and headphones on and heavy metal music. And yeah, it's a bit of a challenge. It's fun though, because I pretty much have a get out of meeting free card at the moment. So I'm using that also. And I blame John for this other. There's a book called Algorithms to Live By, the Computer Science of Human Decisions. I have been like slowly working my way through it, and it's really making me think a lot. Like, because I notice, you know, a lot of strategies that I have employed at different points. It's like now I know why some stuff has worked that I've gotten away with. It's a really good book. So definitely, would encourage the audience to check that out. So, speaking of good books, how about you, John? What have you been doing this week?
Oh man, I'm trying to launch a book. that's a lot of, that's like just, you know, years off of your life. Writing a book is hard. Launching a book is also just as hard as writing a book. So, you know, everything from trying to promote it, you wouldn't even think like things like getting the book cover right and getting the format for the book right to get someone to lay out the pages and getting the landing page, right? The landing page for the book. I mean, I'm going all out on this. Don't get me wrong. I have a trailer, an actual like a movie trailer for the book. So I've got that, and I have a full landing page. Like when you go and it's the book, like Tim Ferriss does this for his books, but you know, it's a lot of work. So hopefully this will be fruitful, but it's a little bit stressful. I'm going to admit it. So yeah.
Awesome. That's really cool. I'm looking forward to seeing the trailer for your book there.
So how about you, Beege?
we've got several projects going on into production this month, and I'm the API developer on two of them. Really, I only built one of the APIs, but we had a developer leave about a month ago, and so I took over that project too, just sort of helping them finish things up. My biggest frustration lately has been just time management and time taking away from development by non-developers, such as like managers wanting to schedule meetings to talk about the tasks that are left to do before we go to production. And I'm like, we have a Kanban board for that. Everybody can see it. We know what we have left to do. Let me do it. That and other things like our operations people wanting to change the file structure of our reporting service. And it's like, no, not until everything is done and we can like schedule time to do that. And so we've been going back and forth on both of those. On a happier note, I still have the faded stamp on my hand from going out to a friend's 21st birthday party this past weekend. I went out because I promised her back when we used to work together that I'd have a drink with her at her 21st party. Though I will be honest, I spent more on parking than alcohol. Good grief. We didn't even go downtown. We went to Midtown and it was
more expensive. Oh, there's your problem.
Yeah. It was crazy.
What kind of alcohol did you get in Midtown that was cheaper than the parking, though?
Yazoo.
did other people buy it for you? Or did you just find like some place where it's reasonable?
Yeah, a little bit of both. Also, I am preparing to go down to Florida in a few days. We're taking my nephew to Disney for the first time. He'll be 3 in a few weeks, so the whole family is going down, and I haven't seen him in a few months, so I'm kind of looking forward to getting together with him. They're actually driving down right now, and I'll probably see him in a day or two. Just want to get out and just play ball and just hang out with him. He's such a sports kid. Like, he went to a basketball camp the last month or so, and he's a natural. I mean, this is a kid that could shoot a free throw at 18 months. So, but with that in mind, I have something sports related for IoTs. So let's go ahead and roll the music. This week for IoTs, I have a sports-related product called the Wilson X Football. This is a connected football for training and play that helps you become a better football star. When you throw it, the ball tracks velocity, distance, spiral efficiency, spin rate, and whether a pass was caught or dropped. It connects to your phone via Bluetooth to track those, and it'll even play music and sound while you're out playing or practicing. I'll have a link to that in the show notes. Will, who's talking to us this week?
Well, we grabbed a comment from Neil Whitlow. Says, I hope you guys are happy. I was catching up on this episode today, and after your Google Plus burn, you caused me to actually press that icon on my phone for the first time in over a year just to follow you on G Plus. A virtual wasteland indeed. Maybe if you could make it autoplay MIDI files and have sparkly backgrounds like MySpace, then it would be more popular. Love the podcast.
Thanks, Neil. Send us an email with your contact information, because we've got a complete developer water bottle just for you. And guys, if you'd like your very own complete developer water bottle, leave us a review in iTunes or comment on the website or any of our social media. We post all our episodes to Facebook, Twitter, Google+, and LinkedIn. We're also on Path and Tumblr. I do want to point out that if you guys have one water bottle and sent us your contact information but haven't received the water bottle yet, please email me at neckbeards@completedeveloperpodcast.com. I recently sent a bunch out and just want to make sure I didn't miss anyone. I've actually started a spreadsheet to help keep track of everyone, but I want to make sure I didn't miss anyone when sending those out. So send us an email if you didn't get it. That way I can make sure and get that to you.
And now I know, Beej, how you were able to have the parking be more expensive than the drinks. You just took one of those Complete Developer Podcast water bottles and you filled that with vodka.
Exactly. Well, whiskey, but you know, moonshine.
I wouldn't fill it with whiskey. It's going to look like a specimen.
Yeah, it's going to be something clear. Moonshine would work. Vodka.
Moonshine.
Yeah. In Tennessee.
Yeah. You got to do that right. So this week we're interviewing John Sonmez. John is the founder of Simple Programmer, where he tirelessly pursues his vision of transforming complex issues into simple solutions. He's also published over 50 Pluralsight courses on topics such as iOS, Android, .NET, Java, and game development. He is the host of the Simple Programmer podcast and YouTube channel. I listen to Simple Programmer first thing every morning. He's also on the Get Up and Code podcast and is one of the dudes on the Entreprogrammers podcast, which is also one of my favorites. Further, he's also a life coach for software developers and is the author of Soft Skills, the Software Developer's Life Manual, and is getting ready to roll out his upcoming book, The Complete Software Developer's Career Guide. He's also one of the freest human beings I've ever met.
I like that. I think I'm going to, maybe I should put that on my bumper sticker, like a bumper sticker on my car, like the freest human being you ever met. I'm free, bitches.
I mean, like I was just sitting there going, there's nothing, like all the stuff on there doesn't hit the impression that you get, you know? it's stuff you've done, not stuff you are.
And well, so I'll be honest. I tell everybody, well, one, I tell them they need to read Soft Skills, but I tell them if you're going to get it, get the audiobook because I think I'd read the book, but I hadn't listened to the audio the last time we had you on the show. And the extra stuff you put in the audiobook was just, it made such an impression that I tell people, I'm like, get the audiobook because you'll get so much out of it.
Cool. That's cool. Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, I did have some fun recording the audiobook and throwing in that extra stuff. Because, you know, your perspective changes. I mean, heck, if I recorded an audiobook version of it today, it'd probably be like 3 hours longer.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I guess if we can get into the episode itself, we're going to kind of talk about how to present yourself well. And first kind of wanted to talk about first impressions and why that's important.
People make judgments based on a little information. A lot of times it's incomplete data, and they do it very quickly.
So, I mean, like, what have you noticed on that, John? I mean, I know you deal with a lot of developers, you know, trying to get their careers in order. I mean, we kind of see a lot of the same stuff, but you get a broader audience. Like, where do you think developers usually go wrong on this?
Well, you know, I think one of the biggest places is not understanding reality, not accepting reality, right? I mean, reality is not necessarily what you want it to be, but it is what it is. And there's a lot of developers, a lot of people that say, oh, it should be a meritocracy. And for the most part, I agree with them, right? I'm like, hey, yeah, you're right. Your development skill, that should be the primary thing that determines whether you get the job, right? I mean, this is, you know, this is how they, like, your performance should be based on, should determine how well that you do. But that's not reality. So I'd say it begins there is understanding that, yes, even though I may be preaching something, I'm preaching something to help you based on reality, not necessarily what I want or what I think, right, in the world. So I think that's the thing is, like, we can separate our opinions and how we'd love things to work from how they are. Okay, and so I'd say, like, knowing that, with that basis, do people judge a book by their cover? Yes. Do, you know, good-looking, well-dressed people get promoted more? Oh, yes, right? This happens, right? Do sexy women in advertisements sell products better than a fat guy? You betcha. I mean, that's why the advertising industry is what it is. Now, the where I'm going with that is basically just to say that, just understand that perception is everything, and first impressions especially. So I think a lot of developers, right, because we're analytical, because we value our minds, because we value what we have to say and what we think and our abilities, we want to almost shape reality into our making instead of adapting and figuring out how we can adapt ourselves to reality. And that, you know, one of those ways will work out, the other way won't work out. So I think that it really begins at just that base level at understanding and accepting that, even if it's not what you want, you know.
Yeah, also I've noticed that a lot of people that tend to push for this are card-holding members of the Dunning-Kruger Club.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, well, the thing with Dunning-Kruger Club is that, you know, once you have the card, you're not in it anymore.
but seriously, though, I've noticed that most of the people who I hear say it should be a meritocracy think their skills are a lot higher than they actually are.
Right. Right. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just saying, just in general, like, people that think that things, you know, that they should be judged based on certain things, a lot of times they don't have those things. Beej and I have got a friend that talks about how well he deals with people and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And yeah, we've had extended conversations about how that's completely not true.
Well, you see, that's the interesting thing, too, is, like, you know, I even hired an image consultant in the last, like, couple of, like, about a month ago. Actually, I hired two of them because I said, well, you know what? I can't see what I can't see, right? You know, other people have a perception of me that I can't see, right? I can even advise people and coach people on this, but I can't see it myself. So I need some outside help. I need an expert that's going to help me and figure out, okay, how do I need to improve my dress and the way I'm presenting myself and some of the things with my own style. And one of the things that we were discussing, me and this image consultant, we were talking about how, like, you know, because she really wanted me to take up my style. She said, you know, John, you're a real successful guy, but when you wear, you know, a tank top and a backwards hat, you don't look very successful. And I said, well, you know, that's right, but, you know, people know that. And she's like, no, not really. Like that. And I said, I had to kind of yield. And she said, kind of, you know, people that have money, they don't talk about, they don't have to be like, hey, check out my boat, right? They're, you can see it by the way that they walk, by the way that they talk, by the things that they don't do rather than the things that they do and say. And so I think it's kind of interesting that a lot of people that if they have to prove that they have something, if they have to prove they're smart, if they have to tell you how smart they are or how rich they are or how skillful they are in some area, they're probably not, because people who actually have those attributes don't they don't have to, they just are those things. They don't have to say those things. So that, I think that's one aspect of it. And it's kind of interesting because this ties all into the whole style thing, is because you want to dress and look where you don't have to speak, right? If you have to go and you have to say, you know, yeah, I know that I kind of smell and I don't look very good, but I'm a really good programmer. I'm super successful, you know, then it's working against you, right? It's much easier to convey based on what you look like, the impression that you make, that first impression and how you dress and how you present yourself and the personal branding and style that you have is going to say a lot more. In fact, it's going to speak so loudly that it's going to be very, very difficult for someone who even, and I'll give you an example. Here's the perfect example, right? Okay, take someone and put them in a police uniform, okay? As much as you know that this person is not a police officer, you are going to treat them in a different way. You're just going to feel, you know, the full police gear, right? With the belt and the gun and everything, right? You're going to treat them with a certain amount of respect or, you know, for some people, a certain amount of prejudice, right? Yeah. You're going to have strong feelings about this person just because they're wearing that, even when you know they're not really a police officer. And you could take a police officer out of their uniform and you're going to treat them differently. You're going to feel differently about them, right? I mean, that's like same thing, like a firefighter, a military outfit, right? You know, an armed officer in the military. Or heck, I mean, want to take it to the extreme, put someone in, you know what a Nazi army, you know, setup looks like. Like, try to be neutral to someone and not judge them by appearances when they're wearing that getup, right? You see what I'm saying? Like, even if you know, even if you watch them put that on, like, so that's how powerful it is. Like, you can understand that. And so to think that doesn't affect how people perceive you, even when they know it, right, then it's just ludicrous. So it does have a huge impact. And as developers, it's real easy to just wear the flip-flops and roll into the office in shorts because you can, and not realize that even though you can do something, it might not be the best thing because it may not be sending the message that you want to send.
I would agree with that. I mean,
that makes perfect sense. Father's Day was this past weekend, so I spent some time with my dad, and he has shaved his beard and goatee down to just a mustache that looks a lot like the mustache that my really strict uncle has. You know, the one who, you know, has his own business, he's no nonsense, just, you know, Mr. Serious all the time. That's not my dad. My dad is a lot like me, kind of like laid back, goofy, stuff like that. And I told him, I'm like, I can't look at you because it's wrong, because I associate that look with a certain personality type that is not you.
Oh yeah. It's funny how, I mean, it doesn't even really take that much of a change. Like I've started tucking my shirt in at work. Like I wear jeans and a t-shirt, but like I'm still better dressed than a fair chunk of the office, because a lot of those people, you know, like they got their gym clothes on, or they got shorts and flip flops and, you know, kind of ratty. And you know, I'm not saying all of them, but there's a number of them there that do that. And I started tucking my shirt in because I lost some weight, and like I have to do that to keep my pants up. It's weird, just the difference, like just tucking a shirt in, so like noticing that shift.
You know, it's kind of interesting. Like, it's not like you should know this stuff, right? Because, I mean, not everyone studies this stuff, right? I mean, this is one of those things. Heck, very early, I'm going to preface it with that, but when I first started out as a young man, I joined I was in a modeling and acting agency, and I did, you know, some runway stuff, and they taught us all the stuff and colors and matching and all, you know, how to turn and all this stuff, right? Style, you know, black wardrobe and all this kind of stuff. And so I had some experience with this, and I was still committing a lot of fashion faux pas, right? And style has changed, and it does get revamped over time. So I wasn't even aware, like, I went out and hired an image consultant, and then it became very, you know, just with a little bit of coaching, it was very obvious, right? And then I was able to figure out a style and, you know, and clothes that worked for me. And so it's kind of interesting, because after that experience, I'm kind of like, wow, you know what? I would almost recommend that any professional, especially software developer, because you're making enough money, go out and hire someone, an image consultant, what do they call it? A personal stylist, right? One of those, and hire them for a few hours to go to the mall with you shopping and take you shopping and get you a few things that work for you and then explain to you why they work for you. And then you'll be able to go and be somewhat self-sufficient and be able to do this in the future. And it makes a huge, huge impact. And it's kind of interesting too, because it doesn't mean that you have to like dress straight to the laces. Like, you know, I actually, you'll see if you've been watching my YouTube videos, how my style is changing. But you know, I actually, this was the coolest thing that I got, which is I got a bracer, like a leather bracer that I wear all the time now. And it's pretty cool, and it doesn't look like, you know, trashy or anything, but it fits with my style, and I got some rings and stuff, and so I've got some stuff that is uniquely me, that is, you know, a little bit out there a little bit, but then I've got some nice shirts that are, you know, high-quality dress shirts and pants that fit me well. I didn't realize how important it was to have pants that fit you well. You know, some of these things that I should have known, you know, being with my background, but it was escaping me, and I didn't realize how much of an impact those things were. So it might be worth it just to go out there, you know, do a little bit of a search and see if you can find someone that is either an image consultant or a personal stylist. And especially, you know, for most professionals, software developers, maybe it costs you like $500 to go out with a personal stylist. And that might seem like a lot of money, but you know, you get a few pieces in your wardrobe and it's going to make a big difference in your career. Like you're not going to make the mistake. Like someone's not going to, you know, be like, you're going to know that you're looking good, right? And if you're looking in the top, if you're dressed better than 90% of other people, you're going to stand out, and you're going to stand out in a good way.
Okay, so I had to look up what a bracer is, and I looked at it. Somebody's my first
not
thought
been read fair enough.
Well, but my first thought, because there's like the whole forearm ones, and then there's the ones that look like vortex manipulators, and I'm just like, yeah, if I wore one of those, people would think it was like a Doctor Who thing.
Well, yeah, see, I'm thinking, okay, so I got to give you a story behind the bracer. I guess it's like, maybe you could call it like a wrist cuff or something like that. I mean, I think bracer
from messing up your arm when you're shooting a bow.
Okay, I think of like, you know, like what I'm talking about is like a maybe 2 to 3 inch strip of leather that goes around your wrist, right? That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, that's a vortex manipulator.
Okay, it's a vortex manipulator. But
sorry, it's my Doctor Who-ness.
So the story behind it was actually, it's kind of funny, because I was standing in the mirror the other day, and I was thinking, you know, I'm standing there naked in the mirror, admiring myself, and I'm like, I have achieved my childhood dream. And I was like, and the reason why is because when I was young, I watched this old movie. I don't know if you guys have seen it, but Lou Ferrigno was Hercules.
Yep.
In this old that was the best. I fell in love with that movie. Like, Lou Ferrigno looked so, I've never seen a guy look so good than in that movie. To me, that was the epitome of the most macho, like strong looking man. Like, he forever in my mind will be Hercules to me. And so I stood there in my glory in front of the mirror, and I had my bracer on, and I was like, I am Hercules today. And that was, I was like, I achieved my childhood dream. So that's the story behind the bracer, is like, I ever since I watched that movie, I wanted to be big like him, and I wanted to be able to wear bracers in public, and now I can do it. And so, yeah.
Okay. That's kind of cool. I mean, I would wear one because of Torchwood, Doctor Who. People would kind of expect that of me. But we've kind of talked about what you wear and how you dress. How about how you talk to people or interact with other people?
Yeah, I think that's a big piece of it too, for sure, right? I mean, because people are going to obviously see you and come up with an impression, but then what you say is going to either confirm their stereotype or it's going to deny it, right? And there's an interesting thing that I've kind of discovered, which relates to style and also relates to what you say, which is that charisma is created from contradiction. So I could go back to a story in my acting class. Back in the day, when I was a young gentleman, I was in an acting class in a modeling agency. And in my acting class, the acting coach, right? Now, I was doing this part, and I think I was doing a part from, I can't remember what the movie was, because we'd reenact these parts. It might have been Good Will Hunting or something like that. I think it might have been. And he was like, you know what? The thing is, like, what you're doing right now is you're playing sad, so you're playing sad. And he's like, that's not how humans really are. The reason why it looks like it's acting and why it looks like it's fake and why it's not interesting at all is it's because in reality, humans are contradictions. And that's what's interesting about humans is that, you know, if you want to portray this character as a real person, then what you have to do is when people are sad, they're actually also really happy at the same time. Or they're really sad, but they're also mad at the same time. Or they're mad, but they're actually hurt. Or, you know what I mean? There's this contradiction of emotion going on. And so, and he's like, that's what creates charisma. And I thought about that a lot, and it makes so much sense. And so one of the best things that you can do in order to be a charismatic person is that to be an enigma to people, to be a contradiction. So you know, a lot of times when I advise people about dress, like software developers, I say, if you look like an accountant, right? If you're just your countenance, if you look like an accountant, maybe you should dress a little bit more like a little bit more wild, right? So, right against that, right? And this would go again with what you say and how you sound and how you speak, right? If you are someone who looks tough, let's say that, I mean, we have stereotypical racial kind of things, but let's say that you look like someone who, maybe you've just been lifting weights for a long time and you're a big buff guy and you've got the kind of profile where people are going to stereotype you to make you think that you're a really tough guy, right? If you open up your mouth and some slang comes out of it, that's not very impressive. It's like, hey, look, this guy that looks like a thug, he talked like a thug. Wow. Okay. That's really, but if you're so well spoken, right? And you have, and you articulate your words and you're very well spoken and well thought out and you speak like, you know, like Sir Robin, right? That is going to be very interesting and charismatic, and people are going to be drawn to that, right? Because it's a contradiction. It's not what they expected. You know, the same works the other way is if you look like a really straight-laced kind of nerdy guy, but you're a little bit more wild, a little bit more out there, that's also going to be good for you because that's going to create charisma. You're going to be more interesting, right? This whole aspect of interesting and more human, more real, they're going to want to know more about you. Whereas if you're exactly what you appear to be, that's typically, it's boring. It's dull. I already figured you out. Hey, it took me 2 seconds. I looked at you, I sized you up, and then I figured you out and I was right.
Yeah. Cause it is really boring when the pigeonhole is found to be full of pigeon, you know, like there's just nothing else there. It's like, okay, you know, you move on and
exactly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a reason that certain stereotypes are attractive, like the straight-laced librarian with the wild side, for example.
Right.
When you were describing that, that's exactly what I was thinking. Also, when you're talking about acting, too, a lot of times it's not the overt, I'm experiencing this emotion, so I'm going to show this emotion. It's I'm trying to hide this emotion. Like, I was in drama in high school, and our teacher would tell us, don't overtly show that emotion, because you'll be overacting.
Right, exactly.
Like, if someone is sad, they'll be trying to put on a strong face, so they want to appear happy, but deep down, you can tell they're really sad.
Exactly, exactly. Yep. And that's, you know, and, you know, it might seem a little bit far removed too. So how does this work with, you know, how does it relate to developers and how does it relate to your job and whatnot? And I'm not saying like, I'm not saying, don't get me wrong. Don't walk in there and say, you know, and you're happy to be on the team and happy to get the job and you act all distraught because you're trying to hide your excitement because that's going to make you interesting. That's not what I'm saying at all. I'm just saying, just be aware of those things. And how you present yourself, right? I mean, and here's a more like practical down to earth example. That's kind of just something to have in your head is this idea and how you create charisma. But in general, on a more practical level, what it look like is this. It look like very simply when you make a first impression with people, right? Don't go in there on a new team, right? And try to show how smart you are and how much of a genius you are and how everyone else is doing it wrong. And you came here from from somewhere else where everyone does it right, and now and you're going to show them how it's supposed to be done, right? That's going to create a really bad impression. It's going to make you seem like a know-it-all and whatnot. You know, come in instead with a very confident but more humble approach, where you're listening, where you're the wise sage who's going to listen and hear things out and see how they do things, and then maybe weigh in and put your input into it, as opposed to being that hot shot trying to prove themselves on the first day. You know what I mean? So I think that's really where I'd say that it's the down to earth kind of like practicality of this. Not everyone is going to, you know, come in there and treat it like acting class, but at the same time, you got to really pay attention to the way that you're presenting yourself and how other people perceive you in general.
Yeah, I would agree with that, because I remember my first job out of college. I wasn't necessarily cocky, but I was really sure I knew what the right answers were, and I was really quick to offer them. And my boss finally pulled me aside. He's like, "You ever watch Seinfeld?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "You remember Kramer?" Because like Kramer would hear a conversation and just like pop his head in and say something. He's like, "You're kind of doing that." And he was right, you know, like, and now I see I see junior developers doing that on occasion, and it's kind of funny, you know, looking back on it. But I mean, I was not giving the impression that I wanted, because, you know, you're nervous and you think, or I've got to talk like I have all the skill, or they're going to find out that I don't. And really the way you do it is you don't talk, you know, and people assume that you got hired and you know enough. You know, a lot of times that's how you show it, more than just popping in on everything.
Right, exactly. Yeah, there can be this tendency to want to try and prove yourself and to prove that you're worthy, and that comes across as needy, right? That's what that comes across as, or trying to prove. Just like we said earlier in the conversation, where we're talking about, you know, rich people don't say, "Hey, last week on my yacht, here in my backyard," you know, but you know, they typically don't do that, right? Typically, it's going to be how they act that you could tell, you know, when you're talking to someone who has money and who doesn't, and who likes to pretend like they have money, but they've got a really, really big car payment and they barely make it, and they're using payday loans to pay for their car. You could tell the difference, because the one person, it's just commonplace to them. The other person, they're like, they want to really tell you about their car, and you need to check out my car and look how much my car costs, right? And that's the same thing when you come in onto the dev team and you're like, "Hey, I got my degree from Carnegie Mellon. You know, in my class, I was the top of my class, by the way. And, you know, I met Bob Martin one day and we were having this discussion, and I told Bob, yeah, you know what? You're not right about this, Bob." And he said, "You know what? You're right, Joe. You're the smartest developer I ever seen." Right? You just casually drop that in a conversation. It's not coming across as, it's not impressing people. It's because of genuity. That's a new word that I made up, but it's because of your being genuine, right? When you are genuine and you come across as genuine and a relatable person, and people know you're not trying to hide anything and you're just being you, but, you know, and a lot of times when people say, "Oh, just be yourself," that's bullshit. Yeah. Because when people try to be themselves, they're trying to be themselves. What they're trying to do is to hide all their insecurities and just be them. That's not really being yourself. Like, being yourself is trying to be the best version of yourself as possible and improving yourself constantly, but coming across to be vulnerable enough to realize exactly where your faults are, not try to hide them or mask them, and also the same thing with your strengths. At the same time, you don't want to like be super humble and be like, "Oh yeah, you know," and give away all the credit. Like, you just being, again, it comes down to what I talked about earlier, which is just seeing reality clearly and presenting yourself as other people see you, because they already know.
Yeah, it's like I had this conversation with some coworkers. I don't know, it's probably been a year or so ago. They were like, "Well, Will, you know, you cut up a lot, and, you know, you kind of skirt the edge sometimes on jokes." And I'm like, "Well, you know, I don't step over lines too much, but I do maintain that if people are not surprised, they're usually not offended."
Yeah.
Like the surprise is what triggers the offense. It's, you know, it's like a combustible. You got to have a match, and that surprise is what lights it.
Oh yeah. Yeah. You're right on. That's a really astute observation, because that it's so true. I try to be what I call anti-fragile, being that, you know, whatever I'm going to say on my YouTube channel or something, like, there's nothing, I'm not hiding it. There's no skeletons in my closet. Like, it's all out there for you to see. So
I've seen some of those videos.
Right, exactly. So it's really hard to dig up dirt on me, because what kind of dirt are you going to say, right? Because I already aired all the law. I already told you all the shit that I did, that, you know, and you know, the kind of messed up stuff and my failures and mistakes and dumb things I've done. So what are you going to do? Whereas if you're trying to hide this stuff and you're trying to protect it, then man, when someone opens up that closet and all those skeletons fall out, oh, you're in trouble, right? So that's another way to think about it is to play it that way, and you know, you're safer if you don't raise that surprise. And that really comes down to, again, like, you know, we had this guy in my office one time. His name was he's on the phone, his name is Larry, and he's like, and he just like dropping F-bombs at the customers, right? It's like, and he gets away with it. Why? Because that's Larry. That's what Larry does, man. Larry is that guy, right? And it's like anyone else who did something like that, instantly fired, right? But because that's the expectation, he gets away with it. And it's totally fine. It's cool. Everyone likes that about him. But, you know, that's how it works.
Yeah, it really does. And, you know, the other thing, too, is like the whole thing with manners. Because manners are really tricky, because, you know, there's different codes for like how you talk to different people. And sometimes like you either want to confirm the stereotype or you want to break it.
Right.
And like looking at manners as something that is rigidly applied in all cases is probably not the best way to be in a position of control. You know, instead, if you look at them as, you know, I can be a little bit brusque in, you know, a particular situation, you know, that may be completely okay. Whereas if, you know, if I am constantly treating everybody like I'm putting them on a pedestal, it backfires in a big way.
Oh, yes. Yeah, definitely. I like to look at, I think the better lens to look at it rather than manners is what I call frames or frame control, which basically says that, you know, there's a really good book on this that's actually not about this, but it's really about frames, but the book wasn't supposed to be about this. It's called How to Pitch Anything, and it's by Oren, I can't remember his name, but it's called How to Pitch Anything, and it's about how to pitch a startup, essentially, right? But that's not what it's about. What it's about is frame control. It's about this concept, this idea that when two people come into conversation or into any kind of interaction, there's two frames, right? And what a frame is your view of reality, your worldview. And those frames inevitably collide. And whoever has the stronger, more powerful frame, their frame wins and they set the reality. And so there's a lot of situations where knowing this is really important, because if you have that more powerful frame and you can not let someone dominate your frame, you can sort of set what reality is. And this is interesting, because a lot of people say, well, that's weird. Why do all those people drink the Kool-Aid? Like, how did they think that David Koresh was Jesus or something? It's crazy. It's crazy. How could people think that stuff? And it's like, well, he had a really powerful frame, and he crashed other people's frames. And then other people who believed him, they reinforced his frame, and they created that kind of a mass delusion. It's a super powerful concept. And so, you know, it doesn't mean that you need to go out and start a cult inside of your company, but it does mean that
we can't all be Apple.
Exactly. Yeah. You can. Yeah. But well, actually, so that's a great example, actually. So look at companies like, look at Apple, right? That there's a cult there, really. It really, not just in the employees, but in the fanboys, in the people that buy the products, right? That's frame control at work, right? It's extremely powerful. Amazon, Jeff Bezos, he has that power, right? He like gets people to work like dogs, right? For years, right? I mean, it's if you've ever read the book, The Everything Store, and you'll see what kind of torturous stuff that he does, right? And you look at, I'm trying to think of another one of the big ones. Oh, Elon Musk. He's another example. Yes. Man, that guy, like, he inspires people to like, to do stuff that causes them to lose their entire lives, their family, everything, just for his purpose and his goal. Again, not saying to be the cult leader, but I'm just saying, like, look at how powerful that is if you don't. But that same power applies in everyday conversations and interactions with people, whether you opt into it or not. Like, it's going to happen, whether you believe it or like it or not. So you should understand it and know how to harness that power, and realize that what the way, how strong that you're coming across and presenting your reality is what's going to influence. And this is where one of those places where I talk about like being loud, and, you know, I've used the phrase before, strong convictions held loosely, which basically means this. I heard someone else describe this just in a book recently, and they said, I'm trying to think what he said, have your when you say something or you have your arguments be as hard as a cannonball and but willing to change, right? If you have an idea, right, and this goes to impression, and you present that idea, you don't know that anything that you say is absolutely right, but present it as strongly as you can and with conviction.
Kind of moving along, we've talked about impressions and how you dress, how you interact with people. What I would like to get into next is your body language and your posture. And while I know y'all can't see me, my dad was a preacher and my granddad, and I grew up around that, so I talk with my hands. And Will has made fun of me for this before because I've almost knocked things over while we were recording.
You have knocked things over when we were recording, technically.
Don't worry, you're in good company. I did the 23andMe, and I came up to be like, you know, 30% Italian. So,
oh, yeah,
Sicilian. So,
nice, very nice. But you know, a few things are smiling when it's appropriate. Eye contact is really important. The right amount. And this seems to be something, I don't know about you guys, but that I have noticed when talking to people, especially the ones that are trying, but they haven't quite gotten it. They're either shying away and not enough eye contact, or they're staring you down.
Right. Oh, and you notice this big time, like at a software development conference. If you just like walk around and people watch, like that is probably the biggest thing I notice is the body language issues.
Oh, yeah. I mean, body language is going to very much control how people perceive you, perhaps even more so than what you say, and to some degree, even more so than how you've dressed, right? Because you can perceive. Okay, well, just to give you an example, you know, because I'm that kind of guy, you know, and not to make any judgment calls here, but how many of us can recognize an effeminate guy by his body language, right? It's pretty obvious, right? Like you just know. You're like, I bet that guy is not straight, right? That's what you imagine that, right? And you're probably right a lot of the times. And when you're wrong, he's probably sending the message that he didn't want to send. So that can tell you how important it is right there, right? So not to make fun of anyone or say anything like that, but just to understand that this does make a difference, right? There's a lot of things that you can do, right? Even just simple things like if you're crossing your arms, you know, a lot of times it's kind of comfortable way to stand to cross your arms, but that typically sends a signal, and it usually sends a signal like you're tense or you're angry or not interested, right? That's it doesn't always have to mean that, but just to be aware of that, I try not to cross my arms very much because of that, right? Another one is, this is a really common one, especially for any guys at a dance, is to put your hands in your pocket.
Yeah.
Right? If you put your hands in the pocket, if you're at the club and you put your hands in the pocket, what kind of message does that send, right? What has to happen for you to do that? Your shoulders have to shrug down, right? You can see it right now as I'm saying this, you're turning your head to the side, right? Right? Because that's the pose, right? That's exactly what it is. And what does that communicate? It communicates, oh, I'm shy, I'm kind of not sure of myself, I'm kind of awkward here, I don't feel comfortable, right? What is that going to do when you talk to someone when you're like that? It's going to make them not feel comfortable. Because, you know, there's some of those people that you can talk to, and no matter what, they just make you feel uncomfortable.
Yes.
Yes.
And it's because they're so uncomfortable, right? But then there's some of those people that you can talk to, and you're like, and you start off feeling uncomfortable, you're kind of shy, but they make you feel like you're not shy. They make you feel BJ so comfortable. People. Yeah, exactly, right? That's like, they're so welcoming, right? And they're so jovial, and that's so, and a lot of that is not just what they're saying, it's the body language, it's how they're standing, and it's how they're presenting themselves, right? It's a lot of it too, you know, to get into, there's a lot of deep psychology in it, but there's a technique called mirroring, where, you know, we tend to like people that tend to do what we're doing, right? So one way to build rapport with someone very quickly is to mirror their body language. It sounds really silly, and you wouldn't think that, you know, be like, wow, this person thinks, like, they're gonna turn around and be like, stop copying me, and then you say, stop copying me. But it doesn't happen because people don't notice that, not consciously, right? Just try it, you know, try mirroring someone, and you'll see, and it'll be, you know, you're turning the same way, they you know, put their hands in their lap, you put your hands in the lap, right? It's a subconscious thing.
I tell people this when I'm coaching them on interviewing, is to do that. Of course, it's also something that when I was in psychology, especially when I was in grad school, because I was learning to do assessments and stuff, that we would look for was the body language. That was part of the intake process. Part of the assessment was how, if their body language matched their personality and what they were saying.
Right. Exactly. That is that's a critical thing. It's we are very good at detecting dissonance in between someone's body language and what they're saying. I do some coaching for guys in the dating realm, and I've demonstrated them before. I've showed them, like, look, you can go up and you can talk to. It doesn't matter what you say if your actions are betraying. If your body language is betraying your words, you're gonna appear like a creep, or you're gonna appear weird, right? Or unconfident. Like, you can say the most. It doesn't matter what lines you say. It's how you deliver it. You could literally say, "My pants are on fire," but you're delivering it in such a way that you actually have no invested interest. No, you don't care what you don't care whether you're rejected or not, that it comes off super confident, even though it's weird, the words are weird. Right. And it makes so much of a difference. And it's because it's just that simple thing that you said, which is that humans are very, very good. Like, we know when something's off, right? It's when the body language does not match the words or actions that are happening. And so you have to line that up. Otherwise, again, that's that whole thing I talked about, being genuine, right? You're very not genuine if your body language doesn't match the words that you're saying. So
it's almost like the uncanny valley thing, that they talk about with robotics, or if you look at like Japanese horror movies, where people don't quite move right. Man, that's extremely disturbing. Just very slightly off.
This goes back to something we were talking about earlier about with the acting. I've been watching the TV show Dark Matter, and on it they have an android that is wanting to be more human.
Right.
And, like, is trying to pick up on the way that humans act, and it's, I have to give it to the actress that plays the android, because she does such a great job of creating just enough of that uncanny valley to where you actually care about the android and care about its struggles trying to be human.
That's just, yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's, and it's funny because we keep on drifting out. I think some people are gonna be like, what the heck are these guys talking about? Cause they're drifting off into these topics. But, like, how does this practically apply to you as a developer, right? Everything that we've said as far as dressing, as far as first impressions and talking and what we said about, manners and frame control and body language, it all comes down to this. It's not like you need to, like, be this master manipulator and, like, be a puppet master. but it comes down to the fact that if you understand these higher level concepts, then the lower level ones are much simpler, right? So, like, if I had to draw, like, practically, like, ground it and say, okay, what do you need to do, right? I would say this. It'd be as simple as this. Dress two levels above what's acceptable in your office, right? That is going to make you appear more successful, right? So two levels. If you're in a corporation, what does your boss's boss wear in general, right? Or what should he be wearing at that level? Wear that. If as far as, like, first impressions and making sense there, again, not trying to be a cult leader and manipulate everyone, but at the same time, just be aware that if you're trying to impress people or brag about things, it's going to have the opposite effect. So don't do any of that. Don't try to prove things. Just be as genuine and kind and as a nice and understanding, as amicable person as you can be, right? As far as manners and control and, all of that stuff and frame control, just recognize that your reality or someone else's reality is going to win the day in any conversation that you have. And so when you speak with conviction, right? I mean, when I'm talking on this podcast, you guys are like, some people that are listening to this, I guarantee you, if they would have read what I said, they would have said, I totally disagree with everything John's saying. He's a crackpot. But because I'm saying it with such enthusiasm, and because you know that I believe what I'm saying, I have a much higher chance of convincing you. Some people that wouldn't have believed it would now say, yes, I'm going to wear that tinfoil hat and join the cult of John, right? that's your chance. So when you're up in a meeting, speak with conviction. Say what's on your mind and say it. You know, you can even say, look, I might not be right about this, but this is what I think. And this is, you know, I'm willing to be proven wrong, but unless I'm proven wrong, this is here where I'm going, right? This is what, and stay with conviction, right? And then on the same thing with the whole mirroring and body language and whatnot, just as long as you're aware of what certain body language does, right? Then you just like be perceptive of it. It doesn't mean like try and super manipulate it or anything like that, but just recognize that if you're standing with your arms crossed all the time and people think you're angry all the time, well, that's why, right? Like, you know, be aware of, like, at any point in time, you know, are you talking with someone, right? And you know, we didn't talk about the eye contact, but I think that's a very basic one too, as well, is just like, make eye contact with people. And don't, you know, and there's a difference, I think, that Beach said between making eye contact and staring people down or, you know, or jeering, right? Or oogling people, right? There's a huge difference. Making eye contact with someone is saying, look, I'm at an equal level as you. I'm not afraid to, I'm not backing down to you. I'm not trying to browbeat you. I'm just here with you. We're on the same level. Let's talk. And, you know, I don't have any hidden agenda here. Whereas, you know, oogling, we know what oogling looks like, right? And we know what, like, trying to intimidate someone by staring them down looks like. And we also know what cowering and being afraid of people and looking away and not making eye contact looks like. So that's, you know, it should be obvious to you when you're doing it right. Because when you're doing it wrong, it'll feel weird.
Exactly. And just one thing on the eye contact that I do want to point out is that you can get a lot of information about the other person from eye contact.
Mm-hmm.
We've started doing this thing at work called Dev Chats, and I've talked about it on the show before, but basically each week, a different developer, we only go into the office one day a week, and each week, a different developer presents on a topic.
Right.
And when I'm presenting, I am looking, of course, I know every single one in the room because I've worked with every one of them, you know, and I hang out with them and they're my friends, but they're also my coworkers. And as I'm presenting, as I'm talking about something, I am looking at each one of them and I can tell which ones are really interested in the topic, which ones are being polite, and which ones have a deadline.
Right.
Usually because the ones with a deadline, you don't see their eyes because their heads are down in a computer, but...
Yeah, no, that's a really, really good point, right? I mean, you can tell when you're in a conversation with someone if you're boring them by looking and seeing. And then, you know, you might want to cut that conversation thread and, you know, that's not interesting. Let's go on or let's... That actually okay, they get it, right?
So. It's like knowing how to exit a conversation.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because I don't know how many events I've been at where people just don't have a good way to slip out of a conversation that they don't want to be in.
And
the awkwardness is incredible. Like, I mean, Beach and I had a booth at Music City Code, and we saw quite a bit of that, didn't we, Beach?
Yeah, that's very true. You kind of... I liked where you went with this because it leads right into the next point that we wanted to talk about, which is how to conduct yourself when you have authority, or as Will likes to say,
authority.
Exactly. Yeah. But what advice would you give? And this is something I have noticed, the people that need it most are the ones that have authority or are given responsibility for the first time. Like, I remember going on so many church trips growing up with a counselor who it was their very first time, like they just graduated high school or something, and they were volunteering, trying to be nice and help out, and it was their first time ever having any sort of authority, and they made it miserable for everyone.
Right, right. Well, there's a certain thing I think about authority, which is this. If you have to exercise your authority, you also lose it, right? So it's a trade, right? Like, yes, authority is like, it's like the get out of jail free card. It's like the ace in the hole. It's like, and you're like, no, you need to do what I said. Like, you get to use that card exactly one time. and then you've lost any sense, semblance of leadership, right? You know, it's wartime. It better be wartime too, right? There better be trenches. There better be freaking grenades being lobbed by the enemy, and someone's got to say, you doing it now, right? So I think that's how I think of it, because authority is something that is given for that purpose, right? But it's not the same as leadership, right? And this is, you know, a really important concept, because you can't assign someone a leadership position. You can assign them a position of authority, right? You have the power to impart consequences on a person. That is what authority is. That's really all that it is, right? And so, at least real authority. And so, that's why I say, if you use it once, it's usually gone, right? It no longer has that effect, and you throw leadership out the window. But leadership is really the quality that I think most people in authority should be seeking, and leadership is one of those things that has to be earned, and it's not given. And so, like, I would say that most of the people in authority positions, the way to handle that is, if you're given authority, then convert it into leadership, right? It's responsibility. Think of it as responsibility. And, you know, the way that you lead someone is that you actually do that. You go out in front, and you are the one who gets hit by the grenade first, right? You're a leader is someone who goes and shows how it's done, right? If I'm going to show you how to do something, if I want my team to do something, if I want people to set the bar here, this is the standard, I crawl under the barbed wire. Now you guys can crawl under the barbed wire, because you've seen me do it. I went out and did it first, and I'm showing you how it's done. I'm not just like trying to make you do stuff I don't want to do, or trying to force you to do things to comply, right? If you're a good leader, then people will follow you. They will do what they, because they know that what you're doing is in the best is in their best interest, and in the best interest of the team. And so I think that's really where it comes down to, is just is understanding that authority, that's not valuable. That's only valuable in wartime, when there's grenades coming and then you have to give the order, right? But 90% of the time, when you're leading, when you're in a team operation, there's not grenades being tossed over. You're not in the foxholes. You don't need authority in order to inspire, right? And if you want to get people's best work out of them, it's not going to come with a gun to their head. It's going to come from them being inspired. It's going to come from them wanting to join you.
I really like the direction that you took this, because I am a strong believer that you can have, well, I'm a strong believer that you can be a good leader without having authority. For example, I'm a junior developer, and on the current team I'm on, I'm actually the most junior person on the team, but I have the nickname of Thor on the team, because I dropped the hammer in a couple of meetings, is what they say, because I called people out for being off topic in our stand-ups. But it's one of those things, like, they respected that and respected me calling them out because I'm on topic. And
well, the other thing too is, you didn't, like, you were telling me about that, and you didn't come down on them like a management person. You redirected it.
Yeah, I mean, it was, hey, this is good, but it's not on topic for the conversation or for this meeting. Let's talk about it afterwards.
Yeah, and I mean, that's, you know, one thing I've learned at different points when I've actually been in a management role is that, like, management, you're not insulated from problems. Like, you don't get to go, okay, I have authority and I can control a thing. It's like, no, you're exposed from two sides now instead of one. Because the people under you can screw you over, the people over you can screw you over. Whereas before, just the people over you could screw you over.
Right.
It's a completely different ball game.
There's actually a really good book on this. I think the best book I found on leadership is called, it's Extreme Ownership by Jocko Willink and Leif Babin. And I think that's the best, really, that I've read, because it really spells it out. And there's so many principles in there that he talks about that I think get ignored, you know, the whole idea of gripes going up and that you're kind of responsible actually for your leaders. Like, for the people above you, yeah. You're responsible for them, which is kind of an interesting concept. But what he says is, it's like, you know, if they, like, you're responsible for giving them the information they need to do their job. So you kind of almost have to, like, lead your leaders, or, you know, to some degree. So there's just a lot of good nuggets in there. I would say it's worth a read for anyone that considers themselves a leader or is in a leadership position. But just understanding that difference between authority and leadership is really, really, really the key. You need to inspire people. people. You can't, you know, whip people.
I'm really glad you said that, because I was thinking, as we've been talking, I was thinking this would make a really great topic for a book. Like, there is a lot that you could say about the difference between authority and leadership.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, I did a whole chapter in my book on this, and talking about specifically for developers leadership, and I quoted a lot of that book, of the Extreme Ownership book.
So, kind of wrapping it up, sometimes you make a bad impression. Sometimes you've been going in shorts and flip-flops for a while, but you want to start making a change. You want to change the impression that you have, and how would you suggest people go about changing the impression that they make on people?
I love this. I love this question. I love getting this question. This is one of my favorite questions about this topic. It's very simple, because here's the thing. Okay. Like, you're like, and this is what stops people from doing it. It's so stupid, right? You don't change because you're afraid of what people will think when you change. Like, whether it be your clothes or your personality or doing something that you shouldn't be doing, or, you know, stopping smoking pot now and hanging out with your potty smoking friends. You know, it's fine if you do that, but I'm not into it. But you know what I'm saying? Like, anything that you try to do to improve yourself, right? Let's say that, you know, you get this idea and you're like, man, I'm going to start wearing a suit and tie to work every day. Which is probably a cool idea. I mean, not for everyone, but if you decide that. But what's the thing that stops you? What's the thing that would stop me from wearing my Hercules bracer? Right? It's what other people think of it. But here's the thing about it. It's so simple. Okay, let's say you're going to wear that suit and tie to work every day. Okay? So do it for 2 weeks. All right? When you show up the first day, people are going to be like, what, you got a job interview today? What do you think you're like, GQ today? All right? And they're going to make fun of you, and they're going to get their laughs in, and they're going to, you know, say that. And the ladies are going to be like, you look good. You know? But, you know, all that stuff is going to happen. Maybe not the ladies part, sorry, but, you know, the rest of that will definitely happen. And it'll happen for like a week, and it'll start to quiet down. And after 2 weeks, you know what will happen? People will forget that you ever dressed the other way, because that will be the new normal, and you'll never have to deal with that again. So you got to be able to, like, any kind of time you're going to make a change in your life, right? Your family, everyone's going to be like, you know, like I said, you're going to have that period, but it's going to last about 2 weeks, and then it's done, and then it's over, and then you've got the new normal, and you can just stick at that new normal. So you got to bear it. You got to bear it out. You just got to, you know, and realize that it's going to pass. That's the best advice I can give on that.
That's really cool. That pretty much wraps us up. John, want to thank you for coming on and talking to us again. It's always enlightening, and I honestly really enjoy what you have to say. Like I said, I really enjoyed listening to Soft Skills. I'm really looking forward to the Complete Software Developer's Career Guide coming out. Gonna probably read that and then listen to it, just like I did with Soft Skills, because I expect that when you record an audio version, are you recording the audio version for that yourself?
Oh yeah, you betcha. It's gonna take me like a month, but I'm gonna do it.
Oh man,
that's awesome, because I am looking forward to that. Just based on Soft Skills, I thoroughly enjoyed listening to that, and so I'm gonna read it and then listen just for those extra bits in the audio.
Cool, awesome.
But yeah. We definitely want to thank you for coming on. But before we close everything out, Will, what do you have for us this week for Tricks of the Trade?
Well, you know, at the beginning, I described John as one of the freest people I've ever met, and I've figured out a lot of this just over time, and that's the notion that most people have of freedom is not actual freedom. Like, If you talk to most people, they think of freedom as not having constraints imposed on them versus having the freedom to put your own constraints on yourself. And I think that's really just observing John over the years and observing my own growth as a person. Like, I've learned that, you know, getting away from other people's constraints is fine, but you have to have discipline. You have to kind of shape yourself in the direction you want to go. Like, that's what freedom is. If you think of freedom as I'm completely free of anybody's constraints on me, there are no constraints on me, I do what I want, you know, I do what I want. Like, that's how you end up on like Mari Povich. Like, that's not a that's not a growth strategy, right? No. You know, freedom is very destructive for people that don't have discipline. You'll see this at companies all the time where they have a really loose culture. You know, they're easygoing. And what happens? You get somebody there that really needs a structure and they don't have it. And they basically degrade over time. It's just horrendously destructive for them. And so I would like to point out that freedom, you know, freedom isn't free. It's something that you get and then you are supposed to put your own discipline on it and go your own way. But you actually have to go somewhere for it to actually be worthwhile. Otherwise, it's really about the most deadly poison you can get.
Yeah, that, very well put. That it's so true. I totally agree. I think that very much. If you can't constrain yourself, like you're free. If you can't do what you set your mind to do, you're not free at all. That's the measure of freedom, is when you say in your mind, I want to do this. I want to lose weight. I want to write a book. I want to accomplish this thing. And you defeat yourself, you're not free. The measure of your freedom is your ability to exercise your own will on yourself.
Exactly. I guess that's all I got.
Stand by for Titanfall.
If you have a question or comment for us, please email us at neckbeards@completedeveloperpodcast.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from Stand By for Titanfall by Pure Bells, available on SoundCloud and licensed under Creative Commons. The intro music for IoTs is Hillbilly Hip Hop by Jason Belcher. For references, show notes, and to sign up to our email list, be sure and check out the website at CompleteDeveloperPodcast.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at CompleteDevPod and like our page on Facebook to keep up with the news about the show. Thanks for listening. See you next time.